You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
It is Monday, January 23rd, 2016. And this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. My name is Greg Sussman, joined only today by Tony Cincotta. Good morning, Tone.
How are we doing today?
It's a quiet day. It's just me and you.
That's all right, right? I mean, heck, what the heck? Sometimes those two other guys, you know, they drive me crazy.
They just get in the way. I say sometimes all three of us drive you crazy, to be fair.
Well, you know, happens.
But I'm here, so you couldn't say that. I guess you don't care.
I could, yeah. But you know, we'll see what happens. We'll take it minute by minute today.
Yeah, that's all we can do, minute by minute today. And what I was thinking is, obviously, we'll start with what happened yesterday. We'll get into some basketball, of course. I realized I was looking at my FanDuel history. I played my $5 game a night. I've dropped from $10 at the start of the season. I won a $5 game a night. I've lost, I believe, 8 in a row. So things aren't going great for me.
So minus 40, that's recoverable. But that's the only problem when you don't play any tournaments.
Yeah,
is that once you start getting, if you get behind, it's hard to recover. Like, you
tell me about it.
Winning streak. Yeah. So if I was out there, I would suggest that Greg Sussman changes his way of playing things.
So too.
And this is the way I would do it.
Okay.
I would go with a $5 double up.
Okay.
I would go with a $2 double up, and okay, I would play in a $3 tournament each night.
Okay.
And if you could nail that one tournament,
one time,
it would set you up for the whole year.
Agreed. You really should do that. You're right. All right. So, I'm trying to find other things to blame, of course, because I don't want to blame myself. but I'm realizing I'm not even getting I'm just putting up terrible scores. I'm just not putting up 300 or 310 or 320. I'm 270, 250, and it's just not getting the job done at this point, unfortunately. So we all,
Would you rather lose like that though, or would you rather be 1 point out of the money?
I think being 1 point out of the money would give me hope for the future. Now when I put lineups in, I feel like I have no hope. So I think I'd rather be closer to the money, to be honest with you.
I go both ways on that. One of the things is, though, when you do what we do and you see so many players and you look at so many players, a lot of times what you do is you fall in love with the guys that you're like, oh, he's 4,000, but he really has good upside. Instead of just taking the plays that everybody should put in, instead of just throwing in the Kawhi letters because it looks good,
yeah,
but everybody else is going to go that. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we outthink ourselves, and we get a little bit of a rut.
Yes, and I think that's where I am. I loved my lineup over the weekend. It just didn't happen. So we'll get into some basketball, of course, during the show. And I also, the FSTA is upon us, which is the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. Everyone in the fantasy industry kind of gets together. Tony, you and I are not there. We are here. But everyone in the fantasy community kind of gets together and starts talking about baseball right now. We have a big expert league draft, which takes place tonight, correct?
Tonight will be in Nashville, Tennessee. They will have the first, I guess, expert draft of the season.
It'll go industry draft because certain people in there aren't experts. But the first industry draft of the season. And with that being said, I think today we've kind of jumped around with baseball a little bit. I want to unhibernate baseball, right? Wake people up from their hibernations, myself included, and figure out what has happened, what's to come. Take a look even at the first round. I never, ever want to do this because I feel like it's boring. But for people that are just waking up, realizing, okay, we have one more football game left in the season, I better start looking to baseball. I want to get into that really from the beginning, and Tony can help me try to figure out where we are and what we should be doing as we head toward draft. So we'll get into all that over the next 3 hours. It'll be fun. But let's start with who is playing in that last football game. And let's start with the first game yesterday, which was just a thrashing of the Green Bay Packers by the Atlanta Falcons. As Matt Ryan brings Atlanta to its first Super Bowl in close to 20 years in the final game of the Georgia Dome. The Falcons win 44-21, and this game was never close. I mean, Atlanta jumped out to that 17-0 lead, 24-0 by halftime, and by then, Green Bay tried to make a comeback happen. It just did not, and Atlanta never took their foot off the gas pedal. Green Bay lost some offensive linemen. They lost some defensive prowess as well, including Micah Hyde, but Tony, this one was never close.
No, never close. Finally, that secondary got abused, which I thought they would a couple times. And Ryan just didn't play a bad game, but he just couldn't keep up. He would have been perfect yesterday as Matt Ryan, 27 for 38, 392, four touchdowns. Then he ran for one. They just could never, ever stop him. And I was telling a story this morning on DFS Today is that you know, I was putting in my lineup, and I had Matt Ryan, and I had Devonta Freeman, and then I had Mohamed Sanu, and I had Taylor Gabriel, and I'm saying, you know what? If I'm going to Falcons, you got to put in the best player on the team. Despite the foot injury, you got to have a little love for Julio Jones, and what a game the guy played.
It was just an insane game. 9 for 180 and 2, including a 73-yard catch-and-run touchdown in which he was held on the play, still got past him. It was just beast mode, and we looked up, and I was with all my friends. We were playing cards and watching the game, and my friend's like, is this a replay from, like, the first game? And they're like, no, this one's live, because you didn't think Julio Jones, with what Jay Glazer reports is 3 foot injuries to that foot, had that speed right now and ability, and he looked as fresh and as agile and as healthy as we've seen in weeks.
It's interesting, because if you watch the game, he takes himself out a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he comes back in a couple plays, and he's ready to go. So he's doing a great job
managing
himself out there. And basically, the Atlanta Falcons just let him go out on the field whenever he wants. And he's the guy making the call, and he's doing a great job of it. So he's got 2 weeks to rest. Then he'll take on the New England Patriots. The Patriots yesterday did a great job, I thought, with Antonio Brown. And I was actually surprised when I saw the numbers after the game that he had 7 catches for 77 yards, because it didn't look like he did anything.
No, it did not look like Antonio Brown had anything to do in that game, and he didn't. We'll get to that one in a second. But Matt Ryan, 392 and 4 yesterday, and it was surgical. You know, Kyle Shanahan, she's had a masterful season, and he looks like he's going to be the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, which is good for him. But Mohamed Sanu, 552 and 1.
But is it?
Is it not good? Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's probably you never know, right, how that's going to play out.
It's probably a pay raise, right?
Yeah. Yes, it should be. But I'm hoping that he can long-term. I have my doubts now. I have my doubts. Okay. I was actually listening to some people talk about Kyle Shanahan.
Right.
They say that playbook is so complex in Atlanta.
Okay.
And Matt Ryan last year really struggled.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wonder who the quarterback's going to be in San Francisco. Like, the terminology, I guess a lot of people that use the West Coast system, he got it from his dad.
Sure.
And they changed the terminology over years to make it simplified and make it a little simpler.
Right.
They haven't in Atlanta, and Kyle Shanahan hasn't simplified the play calling. And that a lot. And I believe yesterday on the show, on the broadcast yesterday, that Phil Simms had talked about was that basically it's tough when you're a quarterback and you have to think about the play and comprehend of it instead of just reacting out there and playing football.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting to see when he has a different quarterback that isn't Matt Ryan.
Yeah, and Matt Ryan going into the season, you know, no one really thought of him as these big-time quarterback. I mean, in fantasy league, Sony, he wasn't drafted, Matt Ryan. Became the league MVP, whether you agree or not, became one of the top two quarterbacks, or top three quarterbacks this year, and he was just tremendous all season. Shanahan did a good job battling through the injuries of his team, and Matt Ryan, whether he had Julio Jones or not, was still putting up the numbers. It was just an incredibly impressive performance by him.
I'll never forget last year, I was watching a Falcons game, and I was texting Mike Blewett, who you can hear every Saturday and Sunday morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network with George Kurtz.
Mm-hmm.
Say, do you think Matt Ryan fixes games? Because he was so bad in some of the plays, and he didn't understand what was going on, and he was just throwing balls to no one. And I was like, I've never seen him this bad. Like, this is terrible. And he wrote back, laugh a lot. I was just thinking the same thing.
And it's totally turned around. I think you just said it, Tony, right? You just mentioned it, that this offense was so complex that it just took him a while to master. And then, you know, having a full year under it and then 2 off-seasons, it worked. I mean, it did it. He was able to do it with Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, that's why I'm interested to see who San Francisco has a quarterback next season.
On the other side, Aaron Rodgers, 287.
You would think, though, Shanahan would bring a backup from somewhere. That would give him the advantage somewhere where he's been in the past.
Unless he just throws out a bunch of first-round picks and goes sign Kirk Cousins.
Well, and they've talked about it. It would make sense, actually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That one makes a lot. I don't know. Like, the only other guy you can think of is like Rex Grossman, because the Shanahans love Rex Grossman. I don't even know if he's in the NFL anymore. The Shanahans love Rex Grossman. Yeah. If Corey was here, Corey would tell you that he's going to go sign Colt McCoy. The Shanahans love Colt McCoy, too. Matt Schaub, maybe, right? Like, he had experience as the offensive coordinator in Houston with Matt Schaub. That's kind of it.
That would be tough to think. Yeah, I mean, Matt might understand the offense, and then I don't know how he'll execute the offense, though. He had problems with execution the last couple of years.
And then you wonder, you have any idea who the Falcons' backup quarterback is?
Jesus, no. We haven't seen him all year,
no,
right?
No. All right, let's see here. Falcons' depth chart, the backup quarterback. You know the backup quarterback in Atlanta is?
Who is it?
Matt Schaub.
Oh, yeah, actually, yes, I forgot. That's right. Matt Schaub.
There you go. There's your next starting quarterback in the San Francisco 49ers.
Can you believe that? If Matt Schaub's the starting quarterback. I'll tell you what, if you're in transition, it's probably not a bad move.
Probably not, right? You just like let him teach a young guy like what the play calls are, right? It kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you don't have to look really crazy and they're like, Jerry. You know, are you surprised at all the Chip Kelly talk there is out there? Like, now he's rumored to take the Atlanta job.
It's crazy. Like, okay, he was in the mix for a head coaching job in Jacksonville, which is hilarious. And then he didn't get that job. Then he probably put his name out there for the offensive coordinator job in Jacksonville. He didn't get that job. So then we assumed, and everybody else kind of assumed, Tone, that he was going to be headed to New England, do some cool thing with Belichick and with Josh McDaniels, and everyone would love Chip Kelly again. And then now all of a sudden he's a favorite for the Atlanta job. I feel like he just has a good agent. Like, that's got to be what it is.
I think so too, but I think he's going to end up in New England.
I agree.
I would think Atlanta's not going to fall through, and he's not going to get that job either.
No way.
And then he's going to end up being like the tight ends coach in New England.
I don't even think he'll be the tight ends coach. I think he'll just be like offensive assistant and just like sit in the booth. And he'll just wait until McDaniels leaves. Like, that's got to be the plan here.
I would think, though, it wouldn't surprise me if they humble him a little bit and make him the tight ends coach.
That'd be funny. Matt LaFleur, it's probably related to Peter LaFleur of Dodgeball. Matt LaFleur is the quarterback's coach in Atlanta. You have to think he would be the favorite of the offensive coordinator position should Kyle Shanahan leave here.
Especially if you're coming off a Super Bowl victory, or at least participating, you want to go in-house, keep everything as close to the same and familiar with everybody in that offense.
Now, I've always wondered, so I obviously have the coaching staff all for the Atlanta Falcons here, and Raheem Morris is the assistant head coach, passing game coordinator for this team. And he's the wide receivers coach. Now, I don't really understand that. We saw this a couple years ago with Eric Mangini. Raheem Morris is a defensive guy. Like, he was, before he became the wide receivers coach and assistant head coach / passing game coordinator, he was a defensive backs coach for the Washington Redskins. Before that, he was obviously the coach for the Bucks. Before that, he was the defensive coordinator for the Bucks. What did this guy do to earn the assistant head coach passing game coordinator for the Falcons?
Well, the first thing he did, he has experience as a head coach in the NFL, so that will get him as the assistant head coach.
Okay.
Now, I like that they switch a guy from offense to defense, because if you understand defense, right, then you basically game plan for offenses all the time. So
sure.
I like when they switch a guy over like that. I think more teams should actually try doing this. And I think if you look at it from the New England Patriots situation, the head coach, Bill Belichick, a big defensive mind, and all of a sudden the New England Patriots have become, you know, the best offense for a long time
forever
in the National Football League. And it's great to see. And when you think about it, it makes sense that a guy, if he's so good at defense, well, you should be game planning as an offense. Why can't you just go on the other side and coach that? And that's what drives me crazy, and that's why I don't understand why people hire guys like Rex Ryan.
Because he's not good at anything? Or he only understands one thing?
He understands deep. Like, he doesn't even, it doesn't seem even puts in the effort to learn the offensive plays. Like, you don't even have your headset on during the game half the time.
Right, and that shows you what a good defensive coordinator can be, but he literally can't focus on the offense. Like, you can't hire him as your offensive line coach because he doesn't know what that is.
No, and I think that they should eliminate him from being a head coach.
I think they will.
I mean, I think you should have a general understanding of both sides of the ball.
Right.
And these guys that don't, they shouldn't be around.
And that's and I bet you there's a lot of coaches that the NFL kind of just washes through that really only understand one side of the ball. Like, how many times do we see Wade Phillips and North Turner become head coaches? And those two guys are fantastic coordinators, but they only understand one side of the ball. Rex Ryan is a perfect example of that, too.
Yeah, and I think in today's situation, you can't go that route. I mean, a lot goes into it. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys, as good as the season they had, and I'm surprised that more people are not outraged at the clock management they had in last week's contest. That was rough to see from a coaching perspective all year. And you got to know exactly what's going on. You see a lot of guys, right? They come out, they have the first 10, 15 plays scripted.
Yep.
I don't know if it necessarily, but it makes the team familiar with where you're going to go. You should, in practice, be practicing these end-of-the-game situations on every Friday. That's what we used to do. You know, you go out, you put the two-minute offense together, and you know what to do in those situations before it happened. It looked like the Dallas Cowboys were unprepared.
Yeah, they were. What they did, the real issue here is that they left any time on the clock for Aaron Rodgers, and you simply can't do that.
And they downed the ball and left the timeout on the board.
That's right. You can't do that either.
Can't take it with you.
The Packers yesterday, Aaron Rodgers, 3 touchdowns, 287-1. Unhealthy wide receivers. Jordy Nelson gutted it out. He had actually a good game, 6 for 67-1.
He was amazing,
right? Like, I know he looked a step slow wearing that Kevlar chest, but, like, he was amazing gutting that out yesterday.
I didn't even consider playing this guy in Daily Fantasy, and he was, right from the start, making some big plays.
Yep.
And then when I saw a tape, and it was a little too late.
Was it Des Bryant tape?
Was already locked.
Oh.
No, there was a tape of him before the game, basically on his knees and doing all these exercises. I'm
right.
Like, oh my God, this guy's healthy. Like, and you know what? If I had saw that tape 30 minutes ago, I would have put him in my lineup.
That's so funny. And he was good. Randall Cobb, actually, this surprised me. I had no idea he had 6 for 82 yesterday. Because he is, like, so clearly, to my estimation, the third wide receiver in Green Bay, the third best wide, third most talented wide receiver in Green Bay.
Yeah, he had a big play at the 34-yard reception, so he gets a chunky yardage there, almost 40% of the yardage, 50% of the yardage on that one play, so that really puts up that number.
Yeah. The Devontae Adams, I guess he was pretty unhealthy. He had 3 catches, 16 yards. He did have a touchdown, though. His longest catch was 8 yards, so I assume he wasn't very healthy. And then Jared Cook, 7 catches, 78 yards, and the touchdown. Aaron Rodgers said after the game, we need this guy back. That's crazy.
No, he's too good. And you knew going into yesterday's game, because you didn't expect Nelson to be healthy. You didn't expect Adams to be healthy.
Right.
I thought this guy was going to have a big game. Like, there was no other tight end I thought could even compare to him in yesterday's games. And he delivered. He's too talented, and he's never been on a really good team, and he makes some mistakes. But we see a lot of quality wide receivers as well as tight ends drop balls. So, yeah, they need him back. This guy's a monster. I think he, next year, in fantasy drafts, he'll probably go as a top 5 tight end if he's back at Green Bay.
You're probably right, especially with Aaron Rodgers admitting his love for him, seeing what he's done in the playoffs. And we talk all the time about the playoffs having an effect on fantasy drafts. Jared Cook will be a very prime example of that.
Yeah, I don't see me being one of those guys.
No.
Someone will be drafting him, and if he can stay on the field and stay healthy, in that offense, he has to put up 700 yards, and he has to get 7 touchdowns at minimum.
Don't you think so? As long as he plays, that's what it is. If he plays every game, those numbers will be there.
And especially if they can't run the ball, that's going to be the greatest
thing to see
in the offseason about this running game.
Absolutely. Ty Montgomery hurt his ribs yesterday, only had 3 carries all day, only caught 1 pass. Like, I like Ty Montgomery. Does he have the strength and the body type to be a running every down running back? I don't know. I don't know about that. But I like Ty Montgomery. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with the position. I do not think Eddie Lace will be back. I think they're just done with that. I think they'll probably go to the draft.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with the draft, right? Because we have a couple guys that are going to go in the first round running back this year.
Yeah.
And we have, Yeah, and we haven't seen that in a long time. Is Green Bay one of the teams that jump in? Do these guys go too early? Or do you wait to the fifth or sixth round and you try to pluck one off in those rounds? Because when you look at the running back, I think a lot of people look at that position as, you know, we're talking about a four-year longevity right now is the average running back in the National Football League. So you don't want to put all that money into them because it takes a year or two for them to learn the game because they can't pass block. A lot of these guys don't come from pro-style offenses, and it ends up being a problem. So 2 years to learn, and then you only get 2 years out of them. People don't invest that kind of pick in those resources for that running back anymore.
Yeah, 100%, absolutely. Nobody cares about the running back anymore. This could be a spot where you probably should. You know, it would help. It would just really help Aaron Rodgers more than anything else. For Aaron Ripkowski, fumbled, might have fumbled the game, changed the entire game, that fumble yesterday.
Oh, that was, it was a nice run. The guy's a hard-nosed player.
Yep.
Like, and then he just coughs it up in that contest. He could tell, I don't know, he got a lot of camera time yesterday after that play.
Yes, he did, because they realized that changed the entire game.
It was terrible. I know. Right? About it, there's a nice young Polish guy working hard, showing the whole country of Poland what you could do if you work hard, and then, man, he drops ball, and that's it.
There you go, Aaron Ripkowski, the Ripper! more people should call him Aaron the Ripper, if you ask me. 44-21, the Atlanta Falcons head to the playoffs on a close to Georgia Dome on a high note, winning the NFC Championship for the first time since 1998. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about the Patriots and the thrashing of the Pittsburgh Steelers in really a playoffs where we've had one great game, one good game, and the rest of week's worth of crappy games. Right, Patriots Steelers next on the Roto Experts. Here on the Roto Experts in the morning. The Patriots defeated Pittsburgh yesterday, 36-17. Led by Chris Hogan, 9-for-180-2. And Tony, I know you're a Patriots fan once the playoffs begin. But I have to tell you, I'm a big announcer guy. Right? Obviously, you know that about me. I listen to the announcers very intently. I know all the announcers and all that stuff. I thought Jim Nantz and Phil Simms had just an atrocious game yesterday. Like, an atrocious game yesterday.
Now, why is that?
How many times did we have to hear that Chris Hogan played lacrosse at Monmouth? That every team should find a lacrosse player? Like, oh my God.
And it's a great story. I guess they were worried people had tuned in, you know, late to this game.
I also didn't understand how, like, when Brady fumbled the ball and Pittsburgh recovered it, and the announcers like, oh, Pittsburgh recovers the fumble, and then it's just like they totally forgot about it after the refs decided to change their minds. Nantz, who on the record is friends with Robert Kraft and friends with the Patriots organization, just was so effusive in the Patriots praise. It was just weird to me. I just thought it was just not a fun, like, you know how Al Michaels or Joe Buck will give you a wink wink, particularly Michaels with like the over under and the spreads. That's above Jim Nantz to be able to do that. Like, the only thing they are playing for in the second half of this game was the over under. And he didn't even consider saying it.
Jim definitely loves himself. Like, you get to that whole, I think he's great. I mean, I think he's great. The golf, he does great.
Sure.
Like, the football's great. Like, I think he's a very, very professional. I have a hard time. But it's just a different style. I prefer, if it was up to me, I would watch Al Michaels every day out of any broadcaster out there.
Right.
It's just a different style. And you know, people get annoyed. Like, I don't understand the fascination with people getting annoyed with Joe Buck, right?
I love Joe Buck.
Yeah. I have no idea what people are talking about half the time. Like, this guy's great.
Yeah.
And Troy are great together. I don't get all of, you know, the negativity. And his negativity, it seems like, though, no matter who does the game.
Oh, absolutely. Except for Al Michaels. You don't really see the negativity with Al Michaels.
Yeah, he's just a real guy, I think. That's
I think so, too.
Whole thing, right?
And I think to be fair to Buck, right, earlier in his career, he wasn't as good as he is now. You could see the improvement of Joe Buck throughout the years. Like, the biggest the criticism of him, when you go back to like the David Tyree catch, was the excitement level. He was just even-keeled, and he took a lot of heat for just being so even-keeled on most of his calls, where he would get excited but not overly excited. And then as he has grown and gotten better, he has, I mean, he has become a big monster game announcer with the excitement level that you hope for.
But that's just the change, I think, in broadcasting and where it's come today. I think if you go back, and of course, he comes from a long history
of course,
broadcasting in the family, right?
Yep.
Everybody had a Midwest accent, that was, which meant they had no accent.
Right.
And everything was, your job was not to be a cheerleader, which every broadcast seems to be now, and just present the facts and let the picture tell the story. And so I think he got caught up in that, and now it's all changed where now you can have an opinion, which you never were allowed to have. And now you can present the game out there, but you become a cheerleader too, and you hype people up. It's like a whole different generation from where broadcast was. I remember growing up, I loved talk radio, and I used to listen to it all the time. I was like a young kid. Like, I wasn't even 13 yet, and I'd be listening to talk radio. None of my friends would listen to
right.
it. And I never thought that I could ever have a show because of my accent, right? And everybody had that Midwest accent. And it just changed overnight. And then also, I remember broadcasters. You were supposed to be a guy that presented the game and never root for a team. Now, every single home broadcast in Major League Baseball, the guy is a cheerleader. Every single guy on the radio in a basketball game is a cheerleader.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's Tom Heinsohn now. Everybody's Cedric Maxwell.
Sure.
It's the craziest thing what's happened in sports.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what has become, like, the even-keeled team announcers to just as partial and as biased as you can become. I completely agree with that, Tony. The New England Patriots, like we said yesterday, 36-17. Hogan had 9 for 180. He dropped another. He dropped a couple more touchdowns. He dropped a bunch of passes. And even that flea flicker touchdown, he almost dropped that too.
Yeah, so this is a guy I had no consideration of playing in Daily Fantasy yesterday because of the injuries. And you saw him, after some of these catches, take a long time to get up. I don't think he was 100% healthy with all these numbers
right.
he put up
right.
yesterday, which is crazy, right? He came into the game with a groin injury. He didn't practice until Friday, and he put up big numbers. I expect him to be fine for the Super Bowl. He got 2 weeks now to prepare, and it's only going to help him. But this is a guy that was playing not 100% healthy.
But the thing is, he'll be fine for the Super Bowl, but game plan-wise, it might mean nothing, right? Like, Chris Hogan might not be involved in the Super Bowl game plan, for all you know.
Yeah, I think, though, in this game, I think he will. I mean, we got a 58 total. We had a 61 total yesterday.
Okay.
I expect both teams to just basically put four receivers on the field and go at it. I think we're going video game football this week in the Super Bowl. Yeah, we haven't seen this in a while. And you know what? And a lot of people out there hate the New England Patriots, and I don't understand why, because they keep winning.
Sure.
But if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, you should just hate your own team when you see that. If you're a Miami Dolphins fan and you saw Wes Welker out there making all those plays those years, you should just hate your team.
Like, you had these players, and you just let them go.
Yeah.
How is the Patriots picking them up?
It's crazy. And then I had no idea. Like, I asked this question on Twitter yesterday, kind of jokingly. Is LeGarrette Blount, is this a revenge game? I mean, he basically walked off the field, right, in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
And fell into heaven, though. So how could he be mad about it?
Yeah, I don't think he's mad at all. I don't think he's really mad. He's thrilled. Because you went from a backup running back in Pittsburgh to being the starting running back on a Super Bowl team.
It is so crazy what they've done here in New England. And I was thinking of the 7th Super Bowls and everything. Like, there's really no, in today's salary cap era in sports, there's really no equal to this team.
Mm-mm.
And I don't think we'll ever see it again.
I agree.
And the only team I remember in Major League Baseball is the Atlanta Braves.
Mm-hmm.
They only won one World Series, but they dominated that National League East for a long time during that Glavine, Maddox, Smoltz era.
Right.
Where they had double-digit division titles.
Oh, yeah.
They were able to do it.
Absolutely.
From the league.
Absolutely. This is almost unheard of how unbelievable, not almost, it is unheard of, to be honest, how dominant this Patriots team has been in this century. Like, I want to go back further, right? It's like the Yankees of like the 20s that were running all the time. Like, this is that big of a deal. They go to the AFC Championship game every single freaking year. Like, every year they go to the AFC Championship game, and then they don't, and then they most likely go to the Super Bowl. What, 7 Super Bowls in 15 years? I mean, that's incredible. They go to the Super Bowl every other year.
Yeah, this is something crazy, and it was crazy listening to Mike Florio talk about it today. And you don't really think about it because you get spoiled and being a Patriots fan. And I grew up when it was terrible. It was crazy. But he says, you know what? It's pretty tough going into the year knowing the best you can do is win a wild card.
It's true. It's pathetic for a Bills fan or a Jets fan or a Dolphins fan to know that. And the crazy thing to me about the Patriots, it doesn't even matter who's there. Like, it doesn't matter who's there. They traded away every good player they had on defense, right? They traded away Chandler yeah. Jones and Jamie Collins, and they got rid of, and without Rob Gronkowski and all that. It does not matter who is on this team. It makes no difference.
Well, that's the whole thing, is you hear a lot of people talk about the injuries and such, and you forget the New England Patriots might have lost their best offensive weapon, and yet it doesn't matter.
You could argue that they lost their best offensive and defensive weapon. Defense by choice, but yeah. It doesn't matter. It's unbelievable to me. LeGarrette Blount is the leading rusher for this team. He rushes for 47 yards and a touchdown, and everyone says how good of a game LeGarrette Blount had.
Yeah. Yeah. He came up big when it happened. And, geez, no one will ever forget that run he had where he had about 8 Pittsburgh Steelers trying to bring him down, and he wouldn't go down. And then, of course, the New England Patriots offensive line pushed him, and they got him to the 1 yard line.
Crazy.
And as a
Crazy.
Coach, you know you have to give him the ball the next play after someone makes a run like that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You knew 1,000,000% he was getting the ball on the next play. And he did.
And they didn't stop him. It was crazy. The Pittsburgh situation was interesting yesterday because you had Le'Veon Bell get that injury. T'Angelo Williams, I thought, played well.
Mm-hmm.
But when
mm-hmm.
you lose your top player early, geez, I don't know. Like, don't you have to be, like, really hurt? Like,
demoralized?
I hate seeing guys just standing there on the sideline and not being in the game. Like,
sucks.
I almost wish they took Le'Veon Bell to the locker room so we didn't have to just sit there standing and say, man, can't you get out there?
And that's the worst, because you saw him, and again, another problem with the announcers, and this isn't really their fault. They had no idea what was wrong with him, right? Like, oh, it looks like he may have a concussion. Then Tracy Wolfson comes on. They've been looking at that left ankle, and they had no idea it was a groin injury.
Yeah. That's surprising, because during a game like that, everybody has a sideline report,
right.
And there's other people on the sideline.
Right.
You'd think someone would have got accurate information.
Yeah, it's so funny they had no clue, and he comes back on, and you actually saw it. You can rarely see these things, but you actually saw it yesterday that he just didn't. He came out, he tried one of his normal moves, and he just did not have the burst or power or speed or energy, and he fell to the ground, and that was it. Took himself right out of the game.
And T'Angelo looked good, actually.
Yeah, he looked
fine. The numbers are not great when you look at the numbers, but he actually came in and he played very well.
As well as
he's
could have
always
hoped, right?
done. Yeah, as well as every time he gets in there, he has an opportunity. He comes up big. It's going to be a real interesting Super Bowl because you have both those backs in Atlanta. It's almost two different game plans when Tevin Coleman's in there, Devonta Freeman. And I think the Atlanta Falcons offense poses more challenges than any other offense in the National Football League.
I think so, too. I think it's going to be really, really, really fun to watch. Little break here. We'll come back. We'll talk more about New England and Pittsburgh, including how Julian Edelman has stepped up without Rob Gronkowski. And the other side, and what Pittsburgh needs to do, because when a team takes away Antonio Brown, which New England did despite 7-for-77, where does Pittsburgh turn? Yesterday, the answer was Eli Rogers. We got to wonder if that'll be a thing for next year, too. We'll talk about that on the other side of this here on the Roto Experts. Steelers and the Patriots. Florio, I'm sorry, what the hell is this?
This is dubstep, according to our library.
Yeah, you can never play that again. Thanks.
No problem.
Dubstep, according to... Tony, what the hell was that?
I have no idea. I don't know. You know, sometimes the music on this channel gets beyond me.
Yeah.
Mike Florio just feels like he needs to fit in sometimes.
Yeah.
Throws out crappy music because the rest of the day... there. Mike, why don't you work on it, Mike? Why don't you step up the musical game? Why don't you take some of this home and listen to it?
Or just play the piano yourself.
Yeah. One, we don't have a piano, and two, I don't know how to play it.
Mm.
So that's the issue there.
Well, you could take a lesson and overachieve.
Yeah, Tony's right. I can't say he's wrong.
All right. Well, when I became a radio producer here, they never told me I would need to learn to play the piano, but I will.
Well, we're telling you now.
I will do so for the Roto Experts.
We're telling you now. Thank you. Tony, yesterday, the narrative with Patriots is that they always take out the best player on the team. Once Le'Veon Bell left this game with a groin injury, Antonio Brown, of course, is the only great player left standing. And Malcolm Butler did a very good job on him. He caught 7 passes for 77 yards on 9 targets. His long was 18. The Patriots never let him get deep, right? They never let him make a move. They always, for the most part, made that first tackle. So after Antonio Brown, the only guy left here was Le'Veon Bell, and he was sitting on the sidelines, which means the Steelers needed to rely on guys like Eli Rogers. And that, and the fact is, Eli Rogers and Jesse James, those guys aren't good enough. And that has been the narrative and the story with Pittsburgh Steelers all season long. They needed another weapon. They needed another wide receiver. They don't have one. Which, my question that comes up from a fantasy perspective, should we not understate the importance of the return of Martavis Bryant to this team?
Oh, yeah, really. He is going to be a key. If you think back to that game, in the very first pass play, Sammy Coates beat a defender.
Yep.
It was a pretty good ball thrown, and he didn't catch it.
Nope.
And that could have been the difference. And that happens, like, I would
every
say
game.
Sammy Coates was a 50 percentile on big plays that were thrown to him at best, right? That were easy plays. I'm not talking about going and catching a ball a little left, a little right. I mean, ball's right in your lap. You're at 50%.
Right.
Martavis Bryant takes that. It's a touchdown. And it's a whole different game.
Yeah. Like, to me, Todd Haley and the Steelers, like, they knew how to beat the Patriots. They just didn't have the players to beat the Patriots, right? Like, Big Ben put balls on Sammy Coates, put balls on Kobe Hamilton, and they couldn't make the catch. They couldn't make a play.
No.
Ben had no choice. I mean, Eli Rogers was fine as a slot guy. He did what he could, but they needed a big play. And when Antonio Brown bottled up and in an inability to get the ball deep because Le'Veon Bell is out, so they had no, you know, the play action wasn't going to do anything. You needed a guy like Martavis Bryant, and he is going to be massive next year. Massive.
I'll tell you right now, it's crazy. Todd Haley, about 6 weeks ago, I was reading somewhere that he thought that teams were catching up to Antonio Brown.
Really?
Really devised game plans to take him out. And he was saying the same thing. We need somebody else to step up because teams are just going out, and they're doing a good job on Antonio Brown, and we try moving him one place to another and get him, you know, involved in all different aspects of the offense, but teams have caught up to Antonio Brown. So I'm real interested to see, and they need to get Martavis Bryant back on the field. And you think about it, though, that could be a very good offense. I don't know if Ladarius Green's ever going to be a guy that's ever going to play 17 games.
Right.
I mean, if you go back to the season, right, they were talking about he might retire because of all the concussion issues that were going on and things like that. So he's not guaranteed to come back. Martavis Bryant is a guy that they need back in the worst way. And I read him on Twitter, and I read stuff about him, and he seems like he's got it going in the right direction. But we've seen that time and time again from athletes that constantly get in trouble.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Like, he's doing all the right things in the best shape of his life. At first, he didn't understand the policy. He didn't give a crap. And now he's turned everything around. So Martavis Bryant, the savior, will be around, supposedly.
We'll see how it plays out. I think he'll go. He'll go in the first 3 or 4 rounds.
So, again, is that an overreaction to the playoffs, like clearly needing somebody else, or is that where he should go?
I think that because he's in that offense,
yep,
he's going to be much like when people drafted Randall Cobb, right? When Randall Cobb was playing well, it's a Green Bay offense. He's the number two guy. I'm going to jump on him. The year we had Jody Nelson get hurt, Davante Adams was going in the 3rd round. I think it's going to be very similar to that.
I just spoke about narratives and the Patriots taking out Antonio Brown and the fact that the Steelers, they needed a second weapon all year. It's all narrative, narrative, and narrative. Well, I got one more narrative that, like, we have to bring up. That Big Ben and the Steelers offense is a totally different offense on the road. Because once again, it's true.
See, to me, it's hard to say that because if you look at Roethlisberger's numbers yesterday, I thought he played a good game.
I did too.
There were opportunities in yesterday's game where you mentioned the wide receiver play was less than great in yesterday's game. He lost the best player on his team in Le'Veon Bell. So I thought he played a great game, and I think a lot of times, in my case, is I think it gets read into too much. I think if you look at the numbers and you saw a big game, and he came and he showed up and he was ready to play, but he just didn't have the cast to pull it off.
No, he just did it. And I agree he came to play, but that narrative will remain, right? Like, nobody will remember.
Yeah,
the crap that he played around the side, or that Le'Veon Bell was hurt.
No.
All they remember is that he went to New England, and I don't want to even say laid an egg because he didn't, but just lost the game.
No, and it was a typical New England game, because you look at the numbers. Pittsburgh had a lot of yardage totals in that game, but they just couldn't put the ball in the end zone when it counted.
No, they couldn't. They had nobody that would go up and make a play. Like, Big Ben was legitimately all by himself yesterday, and that was, of course, you know, he can only do so much. That was the
truth. I'm surprised we saw Colby Hamilton on the field as much as we did,
yep. Mm-hmm.
And he really was overmatched. I don't know what happened with Darius Heywood-Bey, if he was still banged up or why he wasn't on the field. Bay isn't great by any stretch of the imagination, but he's an experienced veteran in a big game. You would have thought he would have had a bigger role.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you point out Colby Hamilton. I'm going to go the other way. After Sammy Coates dropped pass after pass to start the game, like, that is a role that Darius Heywood-Bey can play, right? Like, the only thing that he's good at is being fast. And if Heywood-Bey is as fast as Sammy Coates, he can get behind the defenders. All right, if Coates drops it, let's go to DHB. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah, that was mystifying, the whole Sammy. And you knew they would try that early.
Yeah,
done
of
in
course.
The past. I remember the game against the Jets, and I said, I'm going to play Sammy Coates. And he hadn't even been on the field for a couple weeks. And I said, they got to go to him in this game, because we saw all the problems Revis was having covering guys and getting guys deep. They got to go to him early. And it was so predictable. And that's exactly what they did against the New England Patriots. And it worked, but it wasn't executed.
No, it was not, and that's, again, not the fault of Big Ben, although the narrative will state it. It was the fault of Sammy Coates and Colby Hamilton and, you know, unfortunately, a lackluster Steelers attack. Julian Edelman has stepped up since Rob Gronkowski went down, and Julian Edelman was somebody I drafted this year, and I got rid of him too early before Gronkowski went down, before he got into a real rhythm with Brady. Like, I got rid of him, I believe, going into their bye week, when he had been struggling, and he had been a true wide receiver three in fantasy, and when they got out of that bye and Gronk got hurt, Julian Edelman was just fantastic. 8 catches for 118 yards and a touchdown. And he's another guy, by the way, that any team could have had, right? Because he was with the Patriots. He played defense for them. He was a free agent. He visited the Giants. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to resign. I'm going to go back to New England. And he's become far and away their number one wide receiver.
Yeah, former quarterback. And it's so crazy how good this guy's been. And it's a perfect example, I believe, if the guy was on any other franchise, he'd probably not be in the NFL any longer. And
that's crazy.
The whole thing.
So crazy.
Is when you think about being in the right place at the right time and how your careers have changed. Julian Edelman's going to make a lot of money playing football in his career. And I really think that he would have been in the league 3 years and done if he was on another organization.
So I have a friend. I have a friend that is going to be at Chris Hogan's wedding this winter. And a friend of a friend that's going to be at Chris Hogan's wedding this winter. And we were talking about this yesterday. So is my friend going to get to, friend of a friend going to get to meet Giselle? Like, that would be pretty absurd.
You know what's crazy? I wonder if Tom Brady shows up like at all his teammates' weddings. Like, I think he's close with Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski.
Right.
I don't know if he show up at Chris Hogan's wedding.
Really?
Like, show up. Like if you do, right, don't you have to show up at, like, Van Noy's wedding and maybe Jackie Slater's wedding?
Matt Slater, right? No. You don't have to show up their
way.
Chris Hogan just caught, you know, two touchdown passes in the AFC Championship game. Like, if Chris Hogan catches a Super Bowl touchdown, like, you probably got to show up at the guy's wedding, right?
Well, the other thing is,
and do you invite, like, does the whole coaching staff get invites? Like, does Belichick get an invite to this?
I don't know. That's a great question. So let me ask you a question, though.
Yeah.
It could be a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever Chris Hogan's getting married to, right?
Yeah.
It's her special day.
Right, correct.
Do you think that she wants Giselle Bundchen and Tom Brady walking around on her special day?
No freaking way.
Right, so there could be some hard-fought decisions here. And then fighting over where to put the Tom Brady table? I mean,
oh my God.
I think he might get left off.
You have to think about this. Like, if she was, he would, the wife, the bride, she would bury Giselle in the back corner. There's no way Giselle's getting a good table.
Yeah, so I think there's a good chance that, you know what, we expect, oh, will Tom go?
Okay, well, hold on.
Mrs. Hogan might say, no, they aren't coming to our wedding.
What about, like, okay, so then if we rule it out, Brady and Giselle, I don't know if Julie Edelman's still dating Adriana Lima, but that's a Victoria's Secret model. She can't be there either. She's a wide, and think about this, Hogan and Edelman have got to be friends. They're white wide receivers together. That's got to, Edelman's going to be invited.
I think you can invite any other Victoria's Secret except Giselle and Tom. They're like that. They're at a whole different level. Like,
what about whatever like Playboy playmate Gronk brings?
Well, that would be crazy, right? Like, I could see the wife not wanting him there either.
Yeah.
Like, you definitely don't want Rob Gronkowski at your husband's bachelor party.
No. I'm going to be honest with you. If I'm Chris Hogan, I don't think I want Gronk at the wedding either. Like, I'm afraid he's going to have sex with my bride.
It's so crazy. He was there. It's got to be tough when you think about a guy like Rob Gronkowski. And like I said, you know, before the season, I don't think he'll be back as a Patriot next year.
Yes, you've been saying
it's got to be tough watching the team play and not being on the field. Has got to be the worst thing.
Well,
in the world.
I always find it interesting when the guys that are injured don't go. They aren't on the field. Like, they're in a box. Like, that's always interesting to me. Like, Gronk was yesterday. Because you see people travel, and they're on the field, and they're coaching their team. Like, Tony Romo, for instance, was injured this entire year. And he was never in a box. He was on the field every single game, right? And why wasn't Gronk?
Sometimes it's mandated by the coaching staff
because
guys like Rob Gronkowski are too emotional and too crazy.
Okay.
And they can't stay away from the field. So instead of being Tony Romo and sitting there talking to the quarterback, they'll be right up on the sidelines and they get a pain in the ass and they get in everybody's way.
Okay.
And it's crazy. And then he gets in jeopardy of getting hit on the sideline as well. So they say, hey, you know what? This guy's a mess. Put him up in a box somewhere.
So I are you sure it's not like a Jeremy Shockey thing that when the Giants went to the Super Bowl, they had Shockey in the box because nobody liked him?
Well, that is one thing it could be, too, right?
Yeah.
Jeremy Shockey could be up there in a box nobody likes. Yeah, there's a million different scenarios there with putting guys in the box and how to go about it. And it's sometimes you get guys, you know, that are very good and they can help the team out. You know, some people, I say this all the time, are very good athletes and they really don't know how to play the game. They're just so physically gifted.
Sure.
They excel at it. Maybe Rob Gronkowski on the sideline has nothing to offer anyone.
You may be right. Maybe you're right. All right, we'll take the break here. When we come back, we'll give our first preview of Atlanta and New England, what we're expecting. And we're not going to make a prediction. We'll just have early thoughts. We'll do it next here on the Road to Experts. Hey, Tony, I just realized we will be doing 3 hours of radio now together, and then another hour later this afternoon, just the two of us again.
Oh, yeah. So it's kind of crazy, the whole out of bounds thing. You never know, though, the out of bounds. Like, that's during the afternoon.
Right.
So, like, Benny could be hanging out.
Right.
You never know what happens.
We could bring some waitresses in to hang out with us. Well, it doesn't matter, you know.
I got a great stat I just found on
Twitter.
Aaron Rodgers has 3 playoff losses where his defense has allowed 44-plus points. Tom Brady, in 267 starts as quarterback of the New England Patriots, has never had a defense allow 44 points.
That's unbelievable. That's an unbelievable stat.
Poor Aaron Rodgers, man. You can only do so much.
Absolutely. That's a crazy stat, man. I got another crazy stat for you. Do you know what college will have the most players represented in the Super Bowl?
It's not Monmouth.
It's not Monmouth. It's close,
though. You're led to believe.
That is close.
Rutgers.
Rutgers University.
Wow.
5 Rutgers players will be participating in the Super Bowl, including 3 starters of the Patriots defense, Mohamed Sanu for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then somebody else who I don't know.
Mohamed Sanu, that's amazing. I'll tell you what, the stats didn't indicate how big he was in yesterday's game.
No, Sanu was fantastic yesterday, especially early.
Yeah, he was definitely a guy that looked good. Then they even had that one play which he got his clock cleaned, where he lined up in the quarterback position and he ran the ball to the middle and he got hammered and he said, "Let's end these running plays." I could tell he didn't want to do any more of those.
he was done with that for sure. Brady got hammered a couple times yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what, very physical a Pittsburgh Steelers team yesterday, but they just didn't make the plays. I'll tell you what, it was interesting watching James Harris on the sideline. Mm-hmm. He was disenchanted pretty early.
Yeah.
When I knew this game was over, and I was like, wow.
Yeah, he did. He knew his one was over really quick. So, Patriots open as a 3-point favorite against Atlanta. Atlanta, I read yesterday, will be technically home. I don't know why, because Patriots had a better record, and this is an AFC stadium. So, I don't really know why, unless they just switch off every year. So New England will get to make the coin toss. And I guess that means New England's also in the away locker room in Houston while Atlanta's in the home locker room. I don't know why that is. But Atlanta comes in as 3-point dogs to start. Tony, you said the over-under is 58, right?
Yeah, 58 in this one. So we got 3 points less than that 61, which did go over.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Amazing.
Yeah. So what's your overall thoughts on this game? Like, how does each team win? All that good stuff.
I think Atlanta, right? The defense has played well. And if they continue to play well, they get to the quarterback. But the New England Patriots offensive line, someone mentioned this on a show yesterday, that's the biggest improvement in that team from week four on, as the offensive line has gotten so much better. Tom Brady was getting hit a lot early in the season. And you don't see it as much. And the only time he does get hit is when he hangs onto the ball too long. The wide receiver group's there. I just look at this Atlanta Falcons team. And you look at the two running back situation, nobody really runs the ball in the Patriots, though. But Devonta Freeman coming out of the backfield is such a weapon.
Yeah.
Where you can catch the ball, you can run the ball. I think that if the Patriots didn't have the long history, that the Atlanta Falcons would be favored in this game.
I agree with you. Atlanta has, just using the eye test, have looked better, to be honest, over the last 2 weeks than the Patriots have. But
it wouldn't shock me that we get to the Super Bowl.
Right.
It's Matt Ryan's first game.
Right.
That he comes up a little short.
I agree with you. I totally agree. All right, we'll take a break. I'll give you one more note for football when you come back. And then we'll wake up from hibernation baseball a little bit. Stick around. Go to Rutgers in the morning.